So let's start off taking a look at the Compatibility Administrator tool itself. So the Compatibility Administrator tool comes as part of the Application Compatibility Toolkit, and the Application Compatibility Toolkit comes as part of the Windows Assessment and Deployment Kit, or Windows ADK. So if I go into the ADK installer, I can choose to install the AppCompat Toolkit, and that will bring me this tool, the Compatibility Administrator tool, which is the tool through which I can go through and apply shims. And so it's through this tool I can go through and dissect what has been fixed in the system shim database. So if I look, I can see that, you know, I have a grand total of 7,093 applications that come through pre-shimmed, if you will. So this is the work that the Windows team itself does to ensure that there's a high compatibility bar. So if there's any applications that need some help, they get addressed through the system shim database. There is no action required for these, so we don't need to apply these to your particular system. They're already going to be applied. If you happen to ever install any of these applications, they will already have these shims applied. Now you don't, so no action is required. I can also see all of the fixes that are available. In this case, there are 404. I'm running on Windows 8.1, the Enterprise Preview. And this depends upon which operating system you're using as to how many you have, because once again, shims are shipped as part of the operating system. So the shims you see on Windows 8.1 will be different from the shims you see on 8.0, which will be different from those you see on 7.0, and so forth. So it is really important to ensure that you are using the Compatibility Administrator tool to create the shim database that you need for that platform, that you actually use it on that platform. So if I'm making a transition from Windows XP to Windows 7 as one example, I want to create my shim database on Windows 7. If I'm transitioning from Windows 7 to Windows 8.1, I want to make my shim database on Windows 8.1. I can also see the compatibility modes, what we call layers, and we can then dissect those layers and see what that means. So if I'm applying, as one example, the Windows XP SP3 layer, here I can see all of the shims that are being applied as part of that layer. And it's just a collection of them. So we do a lot of things that seem fairly obvious. We obviously pretend to be that particular version of the operating system. But we also do a number of other things. So we go through and emulate the behavior for sorting from the old operating system. You know, we will, as another example, make sure that even if we have lots and lots of memory, a lot of older software would try and store how much free memory is available inside of a signed 32-bit number, which means at 2 gigabytes or so, it rolls over. And, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you really didn't have that many systems that had more than 2 gigabytes of RAM, so you may not have noticed. So by virtue of simply getting newer systems, you may all of a sudden have application failures that you'd never seen before. So we have a shim applied as part of this layer to help address that, just basically targeting the differences between software that was written then and software that might be written today, because there was simply different hardware then and a different set of assumptions. All of these are grouped together. So this is what we can see exposed through the Compatibility Administrator. What I want to do now is go through and apply what we're doing here to a failing application. So the application I'm going to use, if anyone here has done compatibility before, you may be familiar with this, but for those of you who aren't, I have put together a demo application called the Stock Viewer Shim Demo Application and posted it on my blog. If I scroll down to the bottom, here is the link to the MSI that will allow me to install this demo. The demo application just fails in a number of ways that are actually fairly commonly found for transitions from Windows XP to Windows 7, which is where a lot of the shim work actually ends up being done, typically because of security. It continues to be relevant for anyone who may be thinking about a transition from Windows 7 to Windows 8, because I know that there are some folks out there who did their transition to Windows 7, but they left UAC disabled. And as a result, they never addressed all the standard user issues. And it turns out there are a good number of shims that we added, well, they actually added them back for Windows Vista, specifically targeting that scenario. And most customers in the transition to Windows 7 were going towards a default posture of having UAC enabled, they would have addressed them already. But for those who haven't, this continues to be relevant for that transition. So let's take a look at this application and how we might fix it. So I'll go ahead and launch the application. And the first thing we come across is that it's saying, oh, you need to be an administrator to run this application. And this turns out to be a fairly common pattern that we see, which is, oh, I'm just going to check and see if you have the state, which I expect. And if not, I'm going to complain about it. So relatively straightforward. And then the first thing I would note from a troubleshooting perspective, this is good evidence. I suspect the problem may be as advertised, but I always keep in the back of my mind, right? This may not actually be true, right? Dialog boxes can sometimes be misleading because it is a human being's interpretation of the error that we get back. And we get back something unexpected, sometimes we're making a guess. Well, why might that be? And this is us interpreting that. But let's give it the benefit of the doubt. And, oh, conveniently, it still starts anyway. Let's go through and apply a shim to make that go away. So what I can do is go here under the custom databases. I'm going to make myself a new database, and I'm going to add a new fix to it. I'm going to fix the stock viewer application, and this is made by me. Just put my name in there. It doesn't really matter. This is just a demo. Program files, this is under program files x86 because it is a 32-bit program, and I'll look under stock viewer, and the actual name of the binary is stockviewer.exe. And I don't want to take necessarily a whole compatibility mode. What I want to do is address the specific issue that I'm experiencing, which is a hard-coded check for whether or not you're an administrator. Now, this is where the magic starts. There are 404 different shims. Now, one of the things that I like to do is to just make myself familiar with the ones that are most commonly used. So what I normally do, I just search for a shim that I happen to know the name of. In this case, it's correct file paths. Just because I don't have this bookmarked, I just navigate through here. This brings me to a list of the most commonly used shims. So if we look at what's going on in TechNet, these are my known compatibility fixes for Windows Vista, Windows 7, and Windows 8, and it just lists them out going down. These are the most commonly used shims. So we've not documented all 404 of them. What we've done is documented those that are most commonly used, and the one we want to use is one of those. The ability to pretend to be an administrator when you're not is a really powerful concept that gets used a lot. So it's in this documentation. So learning the shims that are documented here is step one to becoming really effective. So I want to apply the force admin access shim. Looks like I skipped past it, force admin access, just check that box. And then next, we get the matching information. Which file should I apply this to? Because what we don't want to do is we don't want to apply a shim based on a path. Because if we install it to a different path at some point in the future, then the shim wouldn't apply. So in this case, we'll say, all right, well, I don't want to go through and apply it only behind the path. I want to find everything called stockviewer.exe, which has this file version, this company name, this product name. In fact, those defaults look pretty good to me. I'll go ahead and finish that off. And then I'll save it, and I'll call this one stockviewer. And I'll put this on my desktop. And then I can actually go and see, here's the shim database that I've dropped on my desktop. The next step I need to do is to get it installed in order to have it applied to this system. This is just a little database file that would apply this mapping, and it turns out to be really small. In fact, this one isn't big enough to even fill up a whole 4K sector of the disk. It's 886 bytes, so I don't even fill that up. So they are really small. Let's go through and apply it. So installing shim databases is a task that requires administrator privileges. So what we'll do is we'll start with this administrator command prompt, and we're simply going to use the sdb inst command. And I can actually get the syntax for that command and see that, oh, we have the ability to do it even in a quiet mode. And honestly, that's what most of the customers that I work with will do, is they'll just push it through, whether through group policy, whether they push it through their software deployment, single line of script. Since SDB sits inside of System32, it's typically in the path. In fact, I'll never say never, but I have so far never come across anyone who's removed System32 from the path. So I can just do a single SDB inst, be reasonably confident that we'll find it on the system, and I'll point this at, this one happened to be sitting on the desktop, so on my desktop, stockviewer.sdb, and I will do this with the quiet switch. And now we've installed that shim database and the application will start working. So let's go ahead and launch it and see the change in behavior. So rather than popping up a dialog box complaining that I'm not an administrator, it immediately opens up the application. So great news so far. We've gone through and remediated something. Let's think about other tools that might help me remediate even more. So we mentioned that the transition from Windows XP to Windows 7 is the one in which most people, though not quite everyone, was addressing the standard user pieces. And so we looked at one of those aspects, which is the hard-coded check for whether or not you're an administrator. It turns out the other really common one that continues to be a problem, even for folks who had UAC enabled, who are making a transition, for example, from Windows 7 to Windows 8, or from Windows 7 to Windows 8.1, is the hard-coded version check. So for those who are going in and explicitly checking to see which version of the operating system you're running. So in this case, we'll go into the tools and show me a star, and here I have an application that's doing a hard-coded check to see whether or not I am running Windows XP. So from a troubleshooting perspective, the first question that I have is, who actually owns that dialog box? So a tool that I use for that is a sysinternals tool called Process Explorer. If you're not familiar with this one, there's some really great webcasts that talk about this one. And I would strongly encourage you to take a look at the webcasts called The Case of the Unexplained, which is where Mark Rusinovich, the author or co-author of all of the sysinternals tools, goes through and demonstrates them in production. I'm going to use a very small bit of the functionality and spot exactly who owns this, because it turns out this is a different binary. This is a binary called DWM Compositing Rendering Demo.exe, a nice, really strange, really long buried name that StockViewer happens to be launching. But this is the one that I want to fix. It seems to be wanting to run on Windows XP, so what we want to do is pretend to be running on Windows XP. So let's go back into our StockViewer shim database inside of Compatibility Administrator and make another fix. So I'm going to fix the application called the app with the really long name. This is also by me. This is under Program Files, StockViewer, and here is that really long name right there. And what I want to do is pretend to be Windows XP. And let's say I'm running on XP SP3, so we'll go ahead and make that choice if that's working today. And all we want to do is make that little bit of pretending. So we'll find everything with that name and these properties. That name to me seems like it's going to be pretty darn unique, so we'll go ahead and leave that as is. And we'll save that. And now we have updated this shim database. So we'll go ahead and reapply this. This is on my desktop. And we'll make it quiet again. And when quiet, you'll notice that what we've done is we have, oh, we already found this one. we're going to automatically uninstall the old one and replace it with the new one. So you can think of it from a servicing perspective. This is going to give me the ability to just deploy the new one everywhere without having to determine whether or not it's already loaded. All that happened automatically when it was in quiet mode. So this wants Windows XP. So now that we've applied this new custom shim database, and when I say tools, show me a star, it's going to pass that hard-coded version check, and there we have that beautiful, highly functional blue and black star sitting on my screen. I didn't say it was a useful program, but now it is a functioning program. And it's the version lies that turn out to be your really powerful weapon, because no matter how much progress we make on keeping applications compatible by default, one of the challenges we continue to run into over and over again are applications that are explicitly checking the version of the operating system. It's really, really common. So you can see that with shims, we're able to address a wide variety of issues, anything from I'm explicitly checking to see whether you're an administrator. We looked in some of the demos at, you know, not the demos, but in the slides at, I could potentially modify the path that's being applied to something with correct file paths. That's fully documented. We can see what those options are, all the way to things that are very straightforward. I want to see what version of the operating system you are, and I'm not going to like you if you're not something that I know. These are all things that we can fix with the power of shims to give us more time to go through and create the long-term code fix or to get a new version or whatever my long-term solution ends up being. All right, so that was a quick introduction to troubleshooting and remediating applications for Windows-based applications or rich client installs. I now want to spend a little bit of time talking about web applications, because what we're finding is that as Windows applications are failing in smaller and smaller numbers, which has been absolutely what's happening when we look at the transition ever since, you know, Windows 7 especially, where the compatibility has been really high, that the challenge has been on the web. And when we think about the challenges on the web, really critical part of accelerating compatibility is to understand the compatibility infrastructure that's available on the web. So it's a feature called Compatibility View, which actually gives us the ability to behave like previous versions of IE had behaved. So if we kind of look at the history here of what's happening, we had a way of rendering a web page back in IE5, which today we refer to as IE5 Quirks. At the time, we called it simply being IE5. And in the transition to IE6, we said, hey, you know, we're actually changing things to be a lot more standards compliant, right? Now, I'll caveat that this is back over a decade ago when a lot more standards compliant. It was very, you know, it doesn't mean it's really that good by today's standards, but certainly from the standards of 2001, it was a significant change. To the point where we were worried that we would actually have big compatibility problems. So what we did in IE6 was we had the existing IE5 Quirks rule set, and we added a new one, and we gave the developer the ability to choose which one of those they wanted. If they put a doc type in their code, that was the signal that said, oh, you want the new standards compliance mode. And if you didn't, you would continue to get the behavior that we used to have in IE5, which we began to call Quirks mode. In the transition from IE6 to IE7, you can see that, you know, we deprecated the old IE6 implementation of standards and updated it to become the IE7 implementation of standards. So you can see IE7 still has two different ways to render a web page. IE8 expands on that. So we didn't get rid of IE5 Quirks. We did not get rid of IE7 standards. We simply added an additional standards mode, which we call IE8 standards. In the transition to IE9, we kept IE5 Quirks. We kept IE7 standards. We kept IE8 standards, and we added IE9 standards. And in the transition to IE10, we kept 5 Quirks, 7 standards, 8 standards, 9 standards, and we added a couple of new ones. First of all, we added an IE10 standards, which I think everyone would have expected given the trend we've seen so far, but we additionally added a quirks mode that is specifically designed to be more compatible with other browsers when they are in quirks mode, because our goal really is twofold. We want to be as compatible as we possibly can with your existing web applications. But we also want to be as compatible as we can with other browsers, so that web developers don't have to write code specifically for any browser, that they can write code, whether it's quirks mode code or standards mode code, whatever they write, they can write it one time and be able to reasonably expect that the web developer can have it work on every browser. And that's really the goal. And so in order to implement that, we've added quite a bit of complexity. Most people don't understand that IE10 behind the scenes really has 6 different ways in which it could render a web page. And as a result, you know, without being able to leverage that, they end up doing quite a bit of work to, you know, update sites that they may not necessarily have to do today. Now, long term, I think there's some very important benefits of doing that. You know, when you look at where our investments are in terms of web application performance, the investments always come around the latest standards implementation. And so by updating to the latest standards, what we call edge mode, you get a lot of side benefits. But in the interim, as a bridge solution, it's nice to be able to leverage the existing implementations that behave very similar to older browsers. So let's take a look at a demo of how we can leverage those compatibility modes and really get my applications working more quickly. So let's take a look now at a sample web application. This is one from the hypothetical Contoso Moat Corporation. So for those who know Microsoft demos, we see the name Contoso quite a lot. And in this particular application, we found that when we go to the timesheet functionality, it's just sort of laid out very poorly. And if I start looking at what I'm seeing, I can see, oh, this used to be on the right-hand side. It used to be sort of a nice 3-column layout, and it doesn't look like that really at all anymore. So what I want to do is I want to be able to leverage that compatibility infrastructure. Now, what I could do is I could go to the server and modify it, but in this case, you know, if I want to prove out the concept before I start talking to the server folks, one of the tools that I can use is a tool called Fiddler. So the Fiddler web debugger is something that allows me to go through and modify as if the server itself were being modified. It functions as a proxy server that's sort of sitting between you and the website. And because you have this proxy, you're able to modify the contents that are going through it. So the thing that I want to do is go into the Filters tab and set an additional response header. So I can go through and say XUA compatible. This is the flag that we put onto something that allows us to say, I am compatible with this particular way of rendering a web page. So in this particular case, it happens to be something that I'm compatible with that came all the way back to IE5. So I can say IE equals 5. So I can see from a long-term perspective, right, my solution would be to add this header to the server itself. The other option I have is to put a meta tag on the web page itself to configure it that way. But with this small change, the first thing I'm going to do is clear my cache, because right now I have a web cache where I don't have that header included. So we'll go ahead and just clear everything from my cache, and that's done. And now when we navigate to the timesheet, it's going to behave like it used to, rendering the way that it rendered back in IE5. And I'm able to do that to configure it to behave like really any version of the browser that I want to. If I want it to behave like IE8, I could do that as well. So if I go back and clear my cache so I can reset the behavior, now when I go here, this is behaving as it would in IE8, which in this case is really not any better than it was in IE10 mode, but it gives me the flexibility to experiment with that. So I can go in and in a very targeted way, emulate the previous behavior in order to hopefully get my applications working, leveraging this process. Now, what I have found is that once you really understand the compatibility modes that are available in the browser, the ability to go into, you know, modes all the way back to IE5 and apply them with the server configuration or with the modification of the web page source code, that you are able to overcome nearly all of the challenges that you're likely to come across. I say so far in the transition between IE8 and IE9, the number of web applications that have required something more than configuration with XUA compatible to target a previous set of behaviors has been 4 since we've shipped the product. It's been a really very small number. And the number of applications that have required a little additional nudge in the transition from IE9 to IE10 has so far been 1. Now, I know that's anecdotal data, but you know, it's my job to resolve application compatibility issues for a living, and that's really telling to me because the number of issues we saw coming from IE6 or even coming from IE7 to IE8 was significantly higher. So I can't possibly emphasize strongly enough, understanding the compatibility infrastructure available with the browser, applying it for now as you think about what's the long-term plan that I have for updating this to the latest version of standards, both for the capabilities provided, as well as the performance provided, and other, you know, such benefits of moving my applications forward. All right, well, I hope you enjoyed today's introduction to troubleshooting and remediating applications, where we looked at both Windows applications and web applications to get a really good understanding of how do I understand this particular failure and what are the tools available to resolve those. Now, I understand that, yes, you know, of course, I don't think anyone who's brand new to AppCompat is going to walk away from here as a master. So what we're really looking to do is give a brief introduction and point you to some opportunities to continue to get practice, because honestly, there simply is no substitute for practice. So if you're interested in Windows apps, I would encourage you to download the Stock Viewer Shim demo. It comes with a lab guide, and I would walk through that and sort of see, here's how I go through and apply these fixes. If you want to challenge yourself, you could even try going through it without the lab guide and try to find and fix everything, and then check your work to see if you found all those things. Now, for the web, we have the Contoso Moat, which is at ie8demos.com/Contoso Moat, where we have a series of other very specific issues. We have deep dive content available on Channel 9 for troubleshooting both web applications and Windows applications that gets into some more complex applications. But honestly, the number one thing you can do if this is an area that interests you is to just debug lots of stuff, because chances are you're seeing stuff failing all the time. Rather than saying, wow, that's really inconvenient, try to find the root cause of it. You know, have the sysinternals tools running on your system, have some debugging tools available, and try to root cause them. Because in the end, that's what really makes master AppCompat practitioners, is this practice, and hopefully this brief introduction whet your appetite and you can go forward and help to move everyone forward onto modern operating systems. So with that, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.